Alfred Free Time.
Messy fun for the kids. They'll love this. Playing with plaster at Shaftesbury Arts Centre for 6 to 10-year-olds from 1 till 3.30 this afternoon. The Dorset Police Rural Crime Engagement Van will be at Liddell's Car Park tomorrow, Wednesday, from 10 till 11. If you want crime prevention advice or want to raise an issue with a police officer, you've got a chance for an hour tomorrow morning. There's a pop-up cafe tomorrow, Wednesday, at Fontmore Magna Village Hall. All food and drink completely free of charge. The session runs from 2 till 5 for villagers. The White Horse Morris will be dancing at the Bennett Arms in Semley tomorrow, Wednesday evening. They'll be joined by the Sarah Morris from Salisbury.
Once a year we have a joint evening, Wednesday, 8 o'clock in Semley.
It's quiz night at Shaftesbury's Mitre Inn. Tomorrow, Wednesday, the questions asked by Paul Merrifield, and the session starts at 8 p.m. On Thursday afternoon, you can raise any concerns you have about local roads or footpaths with a representative of Dorset Council Highways in a surgery session at Shaftesbury Town Hall between 2 and 4 p.m. Councillor Derek Beer.
There are things that people are really concerned about, speed limits.
You need to book your place by contacting the Town Council. Thursday evening, it's the Mayor Making Ceremony. Councillor Virginia Edwin-Jones will be the Mayor for the year ahead. There's free tea, cake and coffee at 5.30 at the Guildhall. The ceremony upstairs in the Town Hall Chamber from 6 p.m. Fun on Saturday for the kids at Shaftesbury Library. There's a butterfly weaving craft session from 11 till 12. It's free. It's the Farmers Market at Shaftesbury Town Hall in the morning on Saturday from 9 till 11. And the shellfish van will be there. The Gillingham Walking Group have got a 2.5-hour, 5-mile walk around East Noyle at 2 o'clock on Saturday. I'll give you the What Three Words location to find where they're starting from. Haystack, Races, Laser. There's Carnival Club Bingo at Shaftesbury's Lindlar Hall on Saturday evening, starting at 6.30. On Sunday morning, at the Turnpike Showground in Motcombe, there's a car boot sale, 8.30 if you're setting up. Buying, go from 10 o'clock. And there's another vintage and eco fair at Shaftesbury Town Hall on Sunday afternoon. That runs from 10 till 4.
And we're also building up the repair cafe element of the fair, so that will be another thing for people to bring their items in.
There are two big dog shows on Sunday at Fonthill and also in East Noyle. Save the Children Shaftesbury branch have their annual fun day and dog show at Upperley Farm from 11 till around 5.
The waggiest tail and the most lookalike look like their owners. They're so delighted to get a rosette. Absolutely wonderful. It's a lovely atmosphere.
On Tuesday, the 6th of June, the new folk music session starts at the Phoenix Room upstairs in the Arts Centre, led by Lisa South from 6.30 until 7.30.
Folk songs tell stories. They are set to music so that anyone can join in. And I feel that they're part of an oral tradition which goes back hundreds, if not thousands, of years.
Email hello at thisisalfred.com.
The chair of Fontmore Magna Parish Council has addressed a Dorset Council committee to ask why the village's request for a 20-mile-an-hour zone on the A350 was turned down when the Parish Council followed the steps outlined in Dorset Council's application procedure. And Councillor Laura Curtin said widespread local support should have been considered.
This is a curious day for democracy in local government.
Laura addressed Dorset Council's Place and Resources Scrutiny Committee meeting on the 25th of May. Villagers in Fontmell are unhappy that some Dorset communities are going to the next stage of the speed reduction process, but Fontmell's request has been flatly turned down. One of the reasons given was because police wouldn't support the 20-mile-an-hour zone. Villagers' letters were read to the committee to supplement Laura's statement.
Councillors are not honouring the obligation to create a safe road environment which is fit for purpose and to fully take into account the composition of road users, including quality of life and the needs of vulnerable road users on the A350. With overwhelming support for our application from those who live here and no identified third party objecting to our wishes.
And the Archbishop of Canterbury's recent fine for driving at 25 in a 20-mile-an-hour zone has been used to justify the reduction of speed through Fontmell Magna. Villager Alice Mole wrote to Dorset Council saying Justin Welby was fined for speeding on a straight and level, busy A road with excellent visibility and wide pavements on both sides. She said Fontmell has no pavements on a narrow road with sharp blind bends, which residents have used as a footpath for generations. She says there's anxiety for residents who have to cross the road, many resorting to using a car or staying at home. Robert McCurrow wrote that the distance from the crossroads to the corner in both directions is such that there's very limited time to see vehicles approaching. When they're coming fast, time is even more limited. And he says, as a hearing aid user, he can't rely on the sound of approaching traffic, nor can he run across the road. Alice Mull said there were increasing reports of residents, including children, being clipped by wing mirrors of passing cars and reports of near misses. One of the reasons given by Dorset Council for turning down the 20-mile-an-hour request was because the movement of motor vehicles is the primary function of the A350, but former Parish Council Chair Andrew Davis wrote that the same Department for Transport guidelines used by Dorset Highways say that traffic authorities are able to use their powers to introduce 20-mile-an-hour speed limits where there are a significant number of journeys on foot. Head of Highways Jack Wilshire responded in the Place and Resources Scrutiny Committee meeting.
The national guidance underpinning this policy is indeed 10 years old. The Department for Transport have not consulted with Dorset Council on any potential changes on this guidance. Until we receive new guidance, it is important that we adhere to current national guidance.
Dilys Gartside of the 20 is Plenty campaign for Dorset wanted to know which major roads were being considered in the recent batch of applications for a 20-mile-an-hour zone. She was told that no A-classification roads were being assessed. The Turnbulls, who live at the new Spring Meadows estate, say the new road junction has increased the hazard along the A350 because the widening of the carriageway allows speeding vehicles and motorbikes to overtake, and that's dangerous. They say there's been no provision for cyclists or walkers who choose to walk along the road to the village and not through Spring Meadows. And they write that the developers, Penny Farthing, will be paying Dorset Highways over £350,000 in Section 106 payments. They question why this money can't go towards addressing these much-needed safety issues.
Recent concerns have been raised regarding the perception of increased speeding at the Spring Meadows junction in Fontenelle Magna as a result of changes to the road layout linked to the new housing development.
Head of Highways Jack Wilshire again. He says they're looking into that junction.
As a result, a speed survey is being commissioned to understand whether there has been an actual increase. This will coincide with the developer undertaking a road safety audit with any remedial work being identified and addressed.
But Councillor Curtin suggested there's an issue with Dorset Council and its approach.
Recently, the national organiser of the 20s Plenty group said words to the effect that with more than 100 local authorities in the UK, no local authority throws up more barriers to safe speeds than Dorset. So the question is, why do Dorset councillors feel that in ignoring our wishes, it is reasonable for too many residents of Fontenelle Magna to be frightened to cross the road to visit their neighbours, walk their dogs, or do normal everyday activities on footways in the village?
Fontenelle Parish Council was told that its 20-mile-an-hour request had been unsuccessful on the 28th of April. Jack Wilshire says Dorset Council Highways will continue to liaise with the Parish Council.
The safety concern relating to the lack of footway on the bend in the village is a complex matter to consider, with improvement options being limited due to the significant constraints on this part of the A350. Ensuring that the village has the appropriate level of safety signage when balanced against the need to keep signs, lines and street furniture to a minimum has also been a key consideration.
And although Dorset Council has turned down the request to reduce the A350 speed limit to 20 through Fontmel, they do back the use of devices that will flash up motorists' speeds.
Dorset Council supported the Parish Council's request for a new speed indicator device at three locations in the village. Within the last few weeks, the SID has become operational, and this will help to promote the reduction in speeds and increase the feeling of safety, which will be supplemented by the fantastic work of a community speedwalk team.
But villagers we've spoken with say they'll continue their campaign to get the speed reduced to 20 through Fontmel.
At Kit Hill and Catshill Lane. This is Alfred.
Dorset councillors have been talking about ways to reduce the number of collisions on the county's roads. At last Thursday's Place Scrutiny meeting, councillors spoke about the local transport plan, which covers both the Dorset Council and neighbouring Bournemouth, Christchurch and Poole Authority areas. Councillor John Andrews, who represents Sherborne, was complimentary about Dorset Council Highways' maintenance of routes.
We do a remarkable job on our highways. Happened recently, visited East Devon, Exmouth. If I was in a smart car, I would have probably lost it down one or two of the potholes that are down there. So it's a credit to all our highways team, what they do.
Councillor Shane Bartlett wanted to know whether it's possible to assess whether people who've had accidents are local or visiting.
Do we have an ability to do a breakdown of how many are Dorset residents and how many are visitors or tourists to the area not familiar with our roads, which I suspect the police will have that information?
That information could help the Highways Department assess whether the road layout is clear enough.
To give us an understanding whether road layout and road signage is contributing to the fatalities and collisions by motorists with no local knowledge.
Head of Highways Jack Wilshire says council staff do monitor and assess the situation at so-called cluster sites or accident black spots.
A number of accidents have occurred over a five-year period and they will be looked at in more detail, so that happens on a regular basis by their road safety team. And to improve our understanding of road safety, we are working with the Road Safety Partnership and Dorset Police to get better information on non-fatal accidents, so near misses that are occurring on the road network, so we can sort of see in advance where there are other issues occurring.
Councillor Knock Lacey Clark, who represents Blandford Forum, says Dorset Council does have access to police data about serious accidents, where there's been a fatality or a life-changing injury, but they're trying to find a way to collect reports on minor prangs and bumps, which would still provide the Highways Department with useful insight.
Smaller situations and near misses that occur. We're currently working with them in a joint operation to try to get them to share that information and also to find a really good data analysis to go through all of the information of even the people that phone up the police or phone up 111 and say, I've just had a small bump, there's no injuries, the police wouldn't attend, but the police still take that information. And if they can pass that information to us, we can then go through and analyse it all. We can then find out where the near misses and the real intricacies of that data to then find ways that we need to be looking at solving those small, low-level incidents that happen on our roads, which would then help with the cluster spots.
The Alfred Daily.
Dorset Council's special educational needs facility, Coombe House School, based at the former St Mary's School, continues its journey of improvements, but remains a high level of risk to the local authority that owns the company operating the provision. That's what Ian Comfort, the chair of the board of the shareholder committee for the Dorset Centre of Excellence, will tell councillors and senior managers in a meeting next Monday. But recent improvements, including the appointment of a head teacher and managing director, have improved stability and the school's reputation following a rocky start. That means Coombe House is now more attractive to job seekers, with all teaching vacancies for September filled. The company's begun finalising its year-end accounts and is expected to report a financial position exceeding its initial forecast. Coombe House awaits a visit from Ofsted following its last inspection in October, when Ofsted reported Coombe House didn't meet all expected standards. The company's brought in an external assessor and there's been a two-day visit from a former ex-Ofsted inspector, and a consultant with expertise in training independent special school inspectors has also been giving advice on policy decisions. Mr Comfort will report his pride in Coombe House taking part in the mile-long TCS Mini London Marathon last month, joining several specialist settings across the country in attempting to break the world record for the largest number of pledges taking part in a sporting event. He says this demonstrates the school's increasing stability and sense of community. There's been further progress with plans to use the school's leisure facilities. Collaboration with the Friends of Shaftesbury Swimming Group has led to a small group of members agreeing to pilot community swimming sessions. A local diving club, which had used the pool previously, will resume their bookings. And Coombe House has embarked on a partnership with a swim school, selected for the support of children with additional needs. It'll provide the company with rental income in exchange for high-quality swimming tuition for local kids. There's also collaboration with Shaftesbury Town Council, and in particular, Councillor Laura Wilde, a keen runner, in establishing a park run. The meeting will hear there have been significant efforts made to secure grants to set this up. Monday's session will also hear the company's close to finalising agreements with a local short breaks provider to offer day provision for local families for 2 weeks in the upcoming summer holidays. The Dorset Centre of Excellence is also progressing with plans for training and conference facilities within existing buildings, with initial bookings already made for meetings and training events. The future business plan will be presented to the board in private session next Monday. It will include a proposal to develop additional classrooms, ensuring new accommodations ready to support the school's growth beyond September 2024.
Today's Alfred broadcasts are made possible thanks to the support of these Shaftesbury area businesses.
Boatwrights, our town's local and trusted estate agent.
Wessex Internet, helping Alfred and thousands of Shaftesbury area residents connect across the countryside.
Elite Garages at Bell Street Car Park for tyres, brakes, exhausts, clutches, batteries and all servicing, specialising in electric vehicles.
BV Dairy, proud to support the local community. Learn more online at bvdairy.co.uk. Now a commercial announcement. Here's what's new at Shaftesbury's Morrison's Daily with the manager, Sharon Horseman.
Hi, this show from Morrison's Daily is Shaftesbury. Well, it's Tuesday morning and we have a fantastic set of new promotions just for you. So many to talk about in one go. So I'm going to let you come in and have a little look. So come and look out for the yellow labels and come and grab a bargain.
Shaftesbury's 10 past forecast.
It'll remain sunny all through the afternoon with no cloud cover and no risk of rain. Our top temperature around 18 degrees in Motcombe. I'm afraid, though, the pollen count is going to be high. Some cloud overnight, temperatures falling to around 9 Celsius, northeasterly winds around 13 miles an hour. It's going to be cloudier in the morning tomorrow for Wednesday, but sun will break through in the afternoon. Again, no rain, daytime highs at 17 Celsius, cloud and sunshine for market day on Thursday, cloudier in the morning for Friday, with sunshine later and another dry and sunny weekend in prospect.
This is the Alfred Daily.
If you're a guy who likes having fun and wants to try new activities, perhaps you're looking to find a new set of mates. The Shaftesbury and Gillingham Round Table might appeal. The voluntary groups sometimes devise their own entertainment, and on occasion they host special events. They're going clay pigeon shooting in a few days, as you'll hear. Now, clearly the 1960s saw an explosion of civic organisations locally. We've recently heard about the Rotary Club and how that group has celebrated its 60th. Next year, the Round Table will reach the same milestone occasion. And Chairman Keith Fleming needs more members to make that event more memorable.
The Shaftesbury Gillingham Round Table has been running since 1964. So we're due to celebrate our 60th year next year during the pandemic, during COVID, like a lot of groups. We struggled with our members, and we're now trying really hard to do a new membership drive to get the word out, try and get more awareness.
Keith says there is a degree of confusion.
Quite often get confused with the Rotary Club and with the Lions Club and sometimes with the Masons as well. So appreciate the awareness of round tables not very good at the moment.
And part of the problem is the group is currently really small.
We've only got five guys.
How many do you think is achievable?
For it to grow and be successful in terms of continue to meet and celebrate its 60th anniversary next year, we're looking at somewhere around 12 to 13 members.
How would you describe your unique selling proposition?
It's just a group of lads that get together once or twice a month to do different events and activities. We don't have any funny handshakes. There's no entry criteria. We're looking for lads aged 18 to 45. The one thing to have in common is just being interested in doing more with their free time other than watching TV or just going to the pub every night.
So it's lads only. I mean, that's a point of differentiation compared with some organisations, isn't it?
That's correct. So set up in 1927 by Louis Marchese, who's actually a former Rotary Club member, set up Round Table to appeal to chaps that were coming back from World War One for an opportunity for guys to come together to meet. It's from ages 18 to 45 guys. The Association of Round Table do also have Ladies Circle, which does exactly the same as us, but it's for ladies aged 18 to 45. When you get to that 45 milestone, the chaps, it's to move on to something called 41 Club, and for the ladies, a different group called Tangent. So the association itself is a national association. It does accommodate for everyone, but just in a different way.
So you are going to be more active, you'd hope, because of the age thing. You're not going to have a lot of people who are at the elderly end of the scale, as some organisations do have.
Yeah, so the idea is to appeal to that age group from 18 up to 45. We do lots of different activities, so we're not just a rugby club, we're not just a darts club. We go out, we do quad biking, we do skiing. More recently, we're on the golf driving range, and our next meeting is to do clay pigeon shooting just outside Shaftesbury.
So you're a bit like the young farmers without having to have any farming connection.
Yeah, a good way would be an older version of the young farmers would be another way to describe us.
There are some organisations where they take a bit of your salary, that you have to pay a set amount or a sliding scale depending how much you earn each month. You're not like that.
No, because we are a national and actually also an international association of roundtables, so there are actually roundtables across the UK and also in Europe and globally as well. There is a membership fee, which is currently £85 for the year.
Some roundtable groups are very much about fundraising, but you've only got five of you, which makes it really difficult. So is your main focus really on social interaction?
That's correct. So with five people, unfortunately, it's not realistic that we can do fundraising events for the community. In the past, some people may recognise us for doing the fireworks at the North Dorset Rugby Club over the years. And we used to also collect Christmas trees and do the shredding. That was on the meadows in Gillingham. So that's our history in terms of how we supported the community through a charity fireworks display over the years. We'd really like to be able to go back and do that again sometime in the future, or also come up with new ideas. So the round table's motto is to adopt and improve. So we're always looking at ways that we can improve ourselves and adapt to attract more members as well.
And you were telling me that ideally you'd want to double or perhaps triple your numbers to get to a bigger group that can do more stuff.
Yeah, Roundtable operates best with numbers of about 12 to 13 active members, and we're able to then plan some events for the community. If it's possible to get more than that, then that's great, the more the merrier. But for us to be able to do things and support community events and fundraise for the community for local good causes, that's the sort of number that we'd like to have if it's possible.
And are you restricting people based on where they are? Because you're the Shaftesbury and Gillingham branch. The Lions, for example, are the Gillingham, Shaftesbury and Mere. So do you cover bits of Wiltshire as well?
More of a case of whether people are happy to come to our event and meet with us. So already we have a member from Mere. We are trying to do an events programme which is local to Shaftesbury and Gillingham, because I appreciate that we meet the first Wednesday of every month, so people need to get home from work, do what they need to do if they have a family, and then come out to our meeting. And where we are in Shaftesbury and Gillingham, we try our best to come up with events local to accommodate people's availability. So it's more of a case of whether people are happy to travel to where we are doing an event or meeting, whether that's papers and shooting or quad biking. It's more of a case of whether people are happy to travel to us.
So where are you going clay pigeon shooting?
So it will be at AA Shooting School, which is just outside Shaftesbury, and it's on Wednesday the 7th of June in the evening.
Have you done it before?
No, I don't think any of the members, I think one of the members has done it before elsewhere, but I think everyone else it will be for their first time. And that's one of the great things about Roundtable. When you join, it gives you lots of different opportunities that you might not necessarily get that chance to do yourselves. The whole idea is to try new and different things.
Do you find it difficult finding those kind of experiences in our area? Because if you're in, I don't know, Southampton or a more populated area, there's lots of stuff you can choose from.
It is a challenge, and we have thought about some DIY nights. We call them DIY nights because it just involves more planning. And for ourselves, for example, we've been in contact with a local scrapyard to maybe run a scrapyard challenge. So that's a case of us coming up with the idea and planning a night rather than finding somewhere and just ringing them up and booking ourselves in to do an activity such as the clay pigeon shooting.
So what would happen if somebody came along? I guess they'd contact you beforehand, so you'd have a conversation. Is that how you'd like to approach this?
Yeah, so for anyone interested, especially if they're interested in joining us on the 7th of June clay pigeon shooting evening, they could contact us. We'd just have a little chat with them, find out a little bit more about them, give them opportunity to ask us any questions, invite them along to the first event. And on that event, we'll just find out a little bit more about Roundtable, the history of Roundtable. We'll find out a little bit more about them. And if they're interested in joining, we'd probably say to come along two or three more times for us to get to know each other, and then they would have the opportunity to join the association.
Keith says the Roundtable have two types of meeting, the social get-togethers like the clay pigeon shooting and what they call a business meeting, although that's in an informal setting.
We'd go to a local pub, we'd have a few drinks and a meal, and during the course of that evening, we'll discuss any business matters which in the future could be how we can support local good causes in the community, local charities, and any other items of business as part of being a member of the association. So that would be a business meeting.
So you're hoping, as you said earlier on, Keith, to get perhaps another 8 or 9 people involved, perhaps more. If you did get that, what would you do? Have you got a goal, something you'd love to achieve if you were up to full strength?
We've got a few potential ideas for raising money, some charity events that would, for example, we used to do a charity firework display, so that's something we could look at. I know other roundtables do Santa's Sleigh, but I appreciate that that's also covered by other groups, so we try to support those groups and work alongside them with those. We'll come up with some new fundraising events. Once you've raised money through the event, the whole idea is to then give that back to the local community. So whether that's local charities or good causes that make inquiries to us that put forward their case in terms of the need for some support, we then in our business meetings then make a decision about the funds, who we're going to donate it to as part of our work, in addition to providing that social space for men to come along to our social evening.
You can learn more about the local roundtable online.
We have been pretty active with our Facebook page. So you can find us on Facebook as Shaftesbury and Gillingham Roundtable 865.
And you can email Keith Fleming and the roundtable at roundtable865@gmail.com. I've got his mobile number as well. If you need it, give us a shout here at Alfred.
Shooter's Hill or Rifles Lane. This is Alfred.
Fonmel man Adam Masters has a unique hobby that's really useful. He's a specialist in tying knots, and he's hoping to host an international convention of fellow enthusiasts in our town in 2025. As chairman of the Dorset branch of the International Guild of Knot Tiers, Adam's used to giving talks and presentations, but on the Maybank holiday weekend he gained a new string to his bow, a pop-up workshop that delighted kids and their families at the Shaftesbury Abbey Gardens. And there'll be more.
I'm going to try and do them monthly. I'd like to do some workshops where people can make something like a dog lead, or a coaster, or something they can take away.
Adam's shown youngsters how much you can make using rope, twine or string.
I had a few people come over to do some braiding, basically like a friendship bracelet. A couple of kids took those away. And also we made some dragonflies out of paracord, which is quite handy. The kids seem to love that. And then we also did a few little key rings sort of out of a bright fluorescent yellow, and it shines in the light, so it's a bit reflective, that cord. And it's great for like a bag key ring, so it's good to see at night. So those one sort of things I like to do in the winter months, so you could see the kids on their bags, you know, for like going home from school, that sort of stuff.
Youngsters were very much engaged with what you were doing at the Abbey, and you've got a set up. It's almost like one of those close-up magic events. They were captivated by it. You've got the gazebo, yeah. You've got the roller banner things to let people know. So you mean business with this?
Yes, definitely. I did have my rope maker. Unfortunately, it was a bit windy to set up, and because it's quite hard to see the cord, I didn't want anyone to walk through it.
Have you found that kids do engage with this, that they're patient enough?
Yes, definitely. I must have been about 5-year-old doing the knots. You just got to change the way you teach somebody. So instead of using like your left hand and your right hand, maybe the child may not yet know the left and right. So So I'll try and point to the hand and point to the other hand, and that's the best way of trying to teach them. With the older kids and maybe the teenagers and such, you can say, right, this chord over that chord, and you can give them a bit more instruction, leave them a bit to it as well, you know, try not to interfere too much with how they're tying the knot. But with the younger ones, yeah, you have to be a bit more specific and general, really, as in just using, like I say, pointing to one hand or the other hand, say, this is the hand you're going to put over that, and that sort of stuff. Try and make it fun and short timings as well. So if it takes too long, the kids might lose interest.
On Sunday, a simple procedure of winding the fabric around pegs on a board was most effective.
Just one knot, but you're repeating it over and over again, and that's what makes it easy. By the time they've got to the fourth or fifth one, they've got the idea, and you just keep an eye on them then, make sure they don't go wrong, really, and then just try and nudge them back in the correct way if they do go wrong.
Now, making a dragonfly is a fun thing. What's the most useful thing you've made recently?
Some tripods with the cubs, and they were running their tomatoes up them to protect them so they can grow up the tripod. So that's like a very practical use for knots that hopefully the cubs will take away as a skill. Other things like, you know, your coffee cups that you get?
Yeah.
Sometimes you get like a sleeve that goes around them. So I made recently some guards to keep your hand warm and not burn from that.
As a seafaring nation with the nautical applications of knot tying, there's a lot to share.
Lots of people asking me about the just a bit of history. I gave them a couple of stories and talked about a couple of the historical part of it.
As well as overseeing the county association, Adam's involved with the international movement and hopes to bring a convention to Shaftesbury in a couple of years' time.
I joined now the international part, so now I'm part of the executive committee, so we're the ones that run the charity worldwide to try to arrange some big events. So this year the AGM was up at Liverpool just before the Eurovision, which was nice to I went up there, had a massive displays, the AGM. In a couple of years' time, I'm going to try and get their half-yearly meeting down in Shaftesbury, but that's going to be 2025. If I can find somewhere that's big enough to hold it, maybe the town hall may be a bit small, but I'm sure we can get enough tables in there to make it worthwhile.
Some members will travel long distances for that.
We'll have someone, a couple of people over from America, Canada. It depends on who wants to come that far, really. Being in the south, we'll probably get a lot of people from Bristol area, maybe a bit of Devon, the Solent areas. We usually get a couple of tables over from France, about 30 or 40 people, and then we're trying to get the public to come in and have a look and enjoy all our craft.
Adam's planning more sessions in the Abbey Gardens soon, and we'll let you know the dates here on Alfred. And if you're involved in the Shaftesbury area club or organisation looking for an engaging speaker who can offer hands-on activities, Adam Masters is keen to hear from you.
Yeah, previously other people have talked at like WIs and that sort of events. So yeah, hopefully that sort of thing.
And if you want Adam's contact details, we have them here at Alfred. Get in touch. hello@thisisalfred.com. A great picture sent through today by Rachel Sargent. Do you see it? A peacock on the roof of the Mitre Inn. A great image. That's on Alfred's social media right now.
From the high point of Dorset,
this is Alfred.
Across Shaftesbury, the Vale and Chase.
We're off to the Maltings gardening with Jan Walls. In a couple of moments, our garden guru will be here with her regular Tuesday tips. First, though, here's Tuesday's Shaston Seasonal Reflections with Joe Hashman from St James's.
May flowers are on the turn in the headlong rush toward flaming June. We note that goosegrass, a.k.a. sweethearts, sticky buds, cleavers and nature's original Velcro, has grappled up through the hedges and is showing tiny white star-like blooms. Going t'other way, bluebells, sinking, fading, flopping, falling apart, storing their futures in the soil and with fat seed pods. In a clearing around a pond, countless flying insects, airborne tree seeds, gossamer threads, catching the sunlight, dance, trail, drift. Back home, creamy platters of elderflower coming out, a fortnight earlier than we used to expect. For me, this changing ebb and flow of seasonal is bittersweet, more than passing months or constantly repeating days of the week. It's about how the natural world does or doesn't work, the very stuff of life.
Joe Hashman back tomorrow, Wednesday morning on Alfred. If you'd like to share your Shaston seasonal reflections, we'd love to hear your nature notes. Email hello@thisisalfred.com. Here's Jan Walls with Tuesday's gardening tips.
Hello. Well, that's Chelsea, done and dusted for another year. Are you pleased or a bit disappointed? And maybe one or two gardens will have the garden clubs up and down the country debating what is a garden. Anyway, let's look forward, because on the 4th of June, it's a full moon. And for the month of June, it's either called a strawberry moon or a flower moon. And I think they're both quite self-explanatory, really, aren't they? And can you remember all the old sayings about red sky at night, shepherd's delight? Red sky in the morning, shepherd's warning. Well, I came across another one. And this one said, red sky in the evening and the morning is grey, to send the traveller on his way. If the evening is grey and the morning red, it will bring the traveller rain upon his head. So it's just a different version of what we've known for many, many years. But I was having a well-deserved rest at the end of the garden with my cup of coffee when I became aware of a rather unpleasant smell. And looking round, the closest plants to me were the winter flowering jasmine, which obviously the flowers have all gone, and the sorbus, commonly known as the rowan or the mountain ash. And the one I'm growing is called pink pagoda, because the berries, instead of being red, are a pearly white tinged with pink. And it was the flowers of this tree that were emitting this awful smell. But this rowan actually had the RHS Award of Garden Merit, and its description is rather glowing. But it never mentioned smelly flowers. But now I know where the smell has come from. Well, now I no longer need to blame the cat. But when I was out and about on the way to Mockham, I found another mountain ash, or whitebeam, and it's now in its spring foliage, and it stands out silver-grey leaves, and the sun was shining on them, and the flowers are quite white, and it was really glowing in the sunshine. However, the leaves will soon turn to green, and it's not quite so stunning then, but still a lovely tree. And there's much to note here on the moultings this week. Firstly, an early flowering yellow rose, which is climbing gracefully over a metal arch. And in the same street, in the front garden, are several yellow shrub roses. Now, both these gardens faced east, so they have the morning sun, and they were glowing in the early morning sunlight. I noticed that some plants will take our attention when one or more of the same type or colour are all growing together. But sometimes it's the ones which grow together and are different by accident or by being planted deliberately by the gardener. Such was an orange climbing rose which was weaving its way through the purple flowers of the wisteria. And even though the wisteria was past its best, it was still a stunning combination of complementary flowers and colours, of course. And another wisteria was on the East Stour Road. And this one, again, was the flowers were fading, but it was flowering in amongst a laburnum. A curtain of yellow flowers really caught my eye. But back home in my little garden, I have picked the first few lettuce leaves and the radishes. They were planted on the 23rd of April. So I get quite excited to think that they are now getting ready to eat, but I have planted up more seedlings to last me through the summer. and my little garden continues to surprise me. And this time I found the common arum lily, or sometimes called cuckoo point, and lords and ladies. It has arrow or spear-shaped leaves, which appear mottled, and it is a wild flower. But the flower itself is protected by an encircling spray. It also has a rather unpleasant smell. But the history of the plant is quite interesting, because in Tudor times it was used as a starch, and it is said that the Tudor ladies, including Queen Elizabeth I, used it as a cosmetic. And as the sap is an irritant, it is not recommended to be used on the skin. Anyway, I hope soon that I will buy the garden arum lily, which is a creamy white leaves and are often used in spring floral arrangements. So here in Shaftesbury, there are many lovely gardens to see and lots of things to do. So enjoy yourselves. Until next time, bye for now.
View from the Hill. Great stories from Shaftesbury visitors on Alfred.
I caught up with David and Kim on holiday from near Brighton, admiring the gardens at Shaftesbury's Gold Hill Museum.
So we're actually on our way back from Cornwall, so we thought we'd stop here on the way back.
And have you been to Shaftesbury before, Kim?
No, this is our first time, so we're very interested to see the street where the advert was made, Hovis advert.
We're going to walk down there later, yes.
So what made you want to stop? Was it just halfway on the route, or did you see a sign?
We'd heard about it, so we planned our trip, so we thought we'd stop here on the way back. Have some lunch here, have a look around. There's an abbey here as well, we didn't realise, so we'll have a look at that later. Just looking around the museum, very interesting.
Yes, I'm going to climb the hill in a minute, I think.
Yes. Yeah.
See if we can get back up.
Yes.
Not that bad. So what do you feel about the appearance of the place then, all right?
Yeah, it's beautiful, these gardens. Lovely flowers in the gardens. Never seen such tall poppies.
Beautiful, aren't they?
Yes.
Brilliant red.
Yes, yeah. Really yes. Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and glorious weather as well, which always helps.
Do you normally go to coastal places? You live at the seaside, so I guess you want to go on to the seaside for your holiday as well.
Sometimes, yeah. Often go to the Lake District, actually, so we like to travel around the UK to different places, really. Yes, yeah, yeah.
But based on what you've seen, would you come back to Shaftesbury, do you think?
Yeah, definitely. It looks a lovely place. Yeah, seems to be lots to see here.
So what's the cool, trendy thing in Brighton at the moment, then? If we go to Brighton, what must we do?
Brighton?
We've got the Fringe at the moment, haven't they?
We've got the Fringe at the moment, the festival going on.
We've got one as well in July.
Yeah.
Oh,
OK. Oh, yeah.
Lovely.
They've got the Eye in Brighton. You can go up the Eye, get a good view of the... it looks like the London Eye. The London Eye goes around, doesn't it? Big wheel. This
it's
one
like
just
a needle-like thing on the front.
Yes.
Isn't it?
It just goes up. Yeah, it just goes up very slowly.
Is it expensive?
It is quite expensive, I think.
Worth it?
Yeah.
On a clear day, it's definitely worth it. Here, gauge it right with the weather.
Yes. Good tip.
Yes.
Yeah.
View from the Hill. Great stories from Shaftesbury visitors on Alfred.
Charlotte Grove grew up in Berwick St John's Fern House, and her diaries record tales of everyday life in the village between 1811 and 1858. As you might have heard recently, Elizabeth Dyley has breathed new life into Grove's journals with her two books, Talking of Charlotte and Charlotte and Mrs Downs. In the second of our two interviews with the author, you'll hear how the wife of Berwick's vicar's diaries tell stories of riots in the West Country and on our doorstep and opposition to the railway coming. And even though there was a Catholic community nearby at Wardour, Charlotte and her vicar husband had strong views about Catholicism.
Very against the Catholic Emancipation Bill of 1829. The leave-over from the Tudor period, which was so bloody and dreadful, with everyone burning everyone at the stake as fast as they possibly could. The rules that had been made against Catholics were just extraordinary. If you were a Catholic before 1829, you couldn't be an officer in the army or the navy. You couldn't be a magistrate. You couldn't be a member of parliament. You were not really allowed to educate your children as Catholics. For quite a long time, I'm not sure when they withdrew, because some of it they did repeal as they went along. Catholics in theory were not allowed to inherit property. Usually Catholic landowners had Protestant friends and they made them trustees of their estates. And they were kept for the Catholic heirs. But it was draconian, as you can think.
There were even anti-Catholic riots, the Gordon riots in London. And here, more riots recounted in Charlotte's diaries.
The Battle of Pitt House.
Bennett was basically attacked by locals who were unhappy about the change, more mechanisation in agricultural practices.
That's right. Charlotte talks about, she doesn't talk directly about those riots because, boringly, that particular diary is missing. But she starts the next diary on January the 1st saying that her brother Tom was on the assizes for trying the late rioters. And she says how many of them were sent to Australia. She also talks a lot about, she talks quite extensively, or enough for me to write more extensively about it, about the riots in Bristol, which were roughly the same time, because the family that lived at Cloud's house at that stage, pre the Wyndhams of Cloud's, the Still family lived at Cloud's, and the house that we know now was not there. They had another house. And one of the Miss Stills had married the man who became mayor of Bristol, and she had her carriage set on. And Charlotte, of course, mentions that, mentions the Bristol riots, and of course they spread right round the country down to where her sister was married to William Hellyer of Coker Court down in Somerset. And she goes and visits there a great deal. And there were the riots spread all about there, and it was all quite dangerous, really.
How did they get their news? Because obviously now you'd have, you know, online sources or TV or radio. Then there wouldn't have been a formalised newspaper, a daily paper, would there have been?
No, there were newspapers. There were newspapers. And the well-off would have had them. But general news, news of battles and things, I think was mostly delivered by the people driving the stagecoaches. They sometimes decorated them for news of good battles and things. And everyone would wave flags and such like. But definitely people like the Groves would have had a newspaper.
And how well connected was Berwick then? Would the stagecoach have come through the village? Would it have been on the main route?
No, I tell you exactly where it went. Drive towards Salisbury, the first turning that says Berwick St John, and go on a mile and hardly that. There's a second turning to Berwick St John. If you peer to the right, there's a largish house in there. That used to be the Glove Inn, where you changed the horses and where you could stay. The stagecoach used to run up to the top of the downs onto what we call the coach road. But in about the 1780s, they developed what's now the A30, and it was a turnpike road. And Charlotte's father and her brother were on the turnpike committee, which was for taking the tolls and then maintaining the road. Later, her brothers used that public transport for coming to and fro. Charlotte herself did not go in a stagecoach till after she was married, and then not very often. And what's rather frustrating is that she goes on a train in late life, says absolutely nothing about it except that she got on it. Which is quite frustrating. But the coaching inns, you see, you would have gone, there was that one there, and then there was the London Elm at Fovent, and the Cribbage Hut, one further on. And previous to that, on top of the coach road, there was what's called Fovent Hut, which was right on top of the coach road, right up on top of the downs there. But they were obviously kind of realised the practicality of bringing it down, bringing the whole road down to ground level. There probably was a lane and a track along the A30, all right, but they improved it enormously. The stagecoaches, you think of them on your Christmas card, and you think of it as being old England forever and ever, but actually the height of the stagecoach era was only about 30 or 40 years. And that was because they used to deliver the post with a single man on a horse. He was a postboy. Quite often, it seemed, he couldn't read, which must have been a little bit of a disadvantage. And he was also, I would say, easy for footpads and folk. So some member of Parliament, I forget who, had the bright idea of delivering the post by a mail coach, and they would finance it by taking passengers. So that all happened about 1770s or so. And they were so successful and so popular that the stagecoaches, which were private enterprises, were set up in competition to them. But come the 1830s, you see, the railways were coming in.
Did you get a sense that villagers wanted the railway to come as close to Berwick as possible?
No, Mr. Grove, there was a question of it going slap through Berwick, through Fern Park. And Mr. Grove said that he would not live at Fern if the railway came through it. But in the end, it didn't. And I actually say in my book, it would have turned Berwick St. John into Tisbury overnight. They chose a different path for it. And the Tisbury line, I mean, that was all quite late after Charlotte's time. Because it took, as you can imagine, it took quite a long while to build the network. But in the meantime, Mr. McAdam, but without the tar, but the same man, had worked out a way of improving the surfaces of the road. The first one he experimented with was somewhere between Bath and Bristol. And he realised that you had to camber the road to get the water to run off it. They started building better roads all over the shop, which made the journeys by stagecoach or mail coach much more comfortable.
Do you think, Elizabeth, you'd have liked Charlotte?
Well, I wouldn't have disliked her, but it would be quite difficult to stomach what we now see as very old-fashioned views. She was quite devout. Well, I've got nothing against that. I certainly wouldn't have disliked her, and I think she probably did have a sense of humour. But I don't think we were much alike. She had an absolute passion for chess. She couldn't bear being beaten. She's very funny about all that. It's hard to say. I certainly got fond of her after about 6 years of writing about her.
Elizabeth Dynley's two books interpreting Charlotte Grove's diaries, Talking of Charlotte and Charlotte and Mrs. Downs, are both available on Amazon.
Alfred's time-saving traffic for Shaftesbury and the villagers.
On the roads, White Pit Lane in East Melbury is going to be closed next Monday, Tuesday and Wednesday for work by Wessex Water. Reminder, if you're going to be travelling by train up to London or stations to London from Tisbury or Gillingham tomorrow, you're going to have to change it to Basingstoke because of strike action. They've got a shuttle service in operation. There'll be no trains at all on our local line through Tisbury or Gillingham on Friday because of the strike. And when they restart services on Saturday, they won't start until after 7:30 in the morning. And there'll be another shuttle, which means you'll have to change on routes between Basingstoke and Yeovil.
Alfred Free Time. You'll hear what's happening in Shaftesbury and the villages.
Terry Pratchett's Weird Sisters has been put on by Shaftesbury Arts Centre's Music and Drama Group. And if you'd like to be on stage or working behind the scenes, they've got an interest evening on Wednesday the 7th of June at 7:30. The Shaftesbury Refugee Group have their annual general meeting on Saturday the 10th of June at the Quaker Meeting House on Abbey Walk. You can learn about all the things they've done in the past year to support the Ukrainian community. The session starts at 10 a.m.
It's the Great Big Green Week, centred on Shaftesbury Town Hall, starting at 2 o'clock on Saturday, the 10th of June. 9 days of activities, including a Shaftesbury Tree Walk on Sunday the 11th at 11 a.m, and storytelling sessions at the Garden Room of Gold Hill Museum at 1 and 3 on Sunday the 11th. There'll also be a tree drawing workshop with local artist Linda Appleby at 5:30 at the Town Hall on Monday the 12th of June. Other events include a session where you can make a bat box at the Town Hall at 6 p.m. on Saturday the 17th of June, and on Sunday the 18th of June you can make a hedgehog box at 2 p.m.
They can use it to rest in during the day, or and or they can hibernate in it.
You'll have seen the scarecrows out around Motcombe. More will be going up over the next couple of days.
We will have an actual prize for someone who does the most eco-friendly scarecrow.
As we count down to the village fete on Saturday, the 10th of June. It opens at 12 midday. Shaftesbury's choir perform at 12:15. There's a Motcombe Primary School performing the official opening at 1 o'clock. And then at 1:30, a gymnastics display by Port Regis School. It's the Croft-style dog show at 1:30. Music from Georgina and Ella at 2, and the Blandford Ukulele Group have a workshop at the same time. There's comedy with professional comedian for the kids. Duncan Oakley will make them laugh at 2:30, and the famous Motcombe Games at 3:15. Music at 4:15 from Far From Hell and Nadia, a hawk display at 4:15 as well. They'll announce the best scarecrows at 4:30, and that'll be followed by the Grand Tug of War at 5 o'clock. And then there's music in the evening with Johnny Wilde and the Broken Hearts at 6:30, Jamarca at 7:30, and Loose Connections topping the bill at 8:30. In jolly good company, the social group meet at the Royal British Legion Hall on Coppice Street on Tuesday the 13th. There'll be an art session with Kate Plowman. It's on from 10 until 12 noon.
My job is to find the things that make people happy, and maybe they can have a bit of respite from being ill or being alone.
From Birdbush to Spread Eagle Hill, this is Alfred.
You'll have noticed all the trees that have been felled on the A350 as you drive north from Shaftesbury through Semley Hollow. Now Shaftesbury Town Council's heard more trees on its land have succumbed to the fungus decimating ash trees across the country. Ash dieback. Town Clerk Bree Logan says residents will notice work to remove affected branches near to Tesco's. They've sought expert advice and there's little option.
We were very fortunate to work with a great arborist, Mark Hawes, who is very proactive with letting us know the health of some of our trees. He's been commissioned to do some work as part of our annual maintenance works, and whilst doing those works he came across some trees which are in the Christie's Lane buffer strip opposite Tesco's essentially, who were essentially showing signs of ash dieback. So we've asked him to essentially remove those affected parts in a sympathetic way, and we need to just keep a very close eye on that to make sure that those remedial works have stopped the problem spreading, if you like.
So do you remove those trees or just bits of those trees?
So at the moment, just those affected limbs in some trees are being removed, essentially, where there is a hazard as a result of that disease.
So we could, unfortunately, in the future, find Christie's Lane is a bit more stark in appearance. I know most of them are beeches up there, but if the ash dieback happens and it's there now, it could spread.
But we have to remember, in that buffer strip, they're not all ash trees, so it's not all trees that are affected. And that's the beauty now of having a contractor who we work with on all of our trees, because we want to make sure that we take a proactive approach to give those trees the best chance to flourish.
So if people see work people chopping away at trees around the Tesco site on Chrissy's Lane, don't be alarmed. I mean, you can be upset, obviously, because it's ash dieback.
Absolutely. Trees are, you know, a very important part of this town, and we've got a five-year tree plan and very committed to working with the tree group to make sure that our trees are cherished for future generations to enjoy. Unfortunately, this work is as a result of a situation that's just beyond our control, and we have a responsibility to make sure that we try and stop the spread.
Bree Logan, Shaftesbury's town clerk there. If you're not normally up at 5 in the morning, you won't hear the sound of birdsong as recorded here by Rachel Diamond at her home on Leighton Lane today. Enjoy this. I'll talk to you later. Stay safe, Shaftesbury.